Primary Reaction Chamber.
Precopa Ramindos on Earth.
Time.
Initial reaction at T-minus 30.
Fuel slug in place.
Stand by for injection.
Capsule breach now.
Reaction commencing.
Containment field hold to 3.14 degrees of time. Initial chambers crossing to capacity.
Can we hold it?
What's happening?
Critical mass.
Hold on! Mind spike!
I'm your host, Winston Crutchfield, and you're listening to the Critical Mass Podcast, your Critical Press Media. We've got a fairly full docket for you today, so I'm not going to waste just a whole lot of time on advertising and catching up on the news and stuff. Feature presentation today is going to be some movie commentaries. I've got one or two things to say about a few movies, and the wife jumps in to keep me focused and on track and perhaps derail us just a little bit. So stick around for that conversation. The primary news feature today is the Data Vault is now online. The Data Vault is a new monthly magazine chapbook and reprint series launched from Critical Press Media this month. The first issue contains a short story on the adventures on the atomic Earth. So check that out. That's available for purchase directly from the Critical Press Media website. Check that out. Lots of good stuff. 99 cents for the electronic download, or get yourself a nice, pretty printed chapbook for $3 or $4. The reprint. Let's see. The reprint volume this month is the Caprona Adventure from Edgar Rice Burroughs, in which a group of adventurers winds up trapped in the savage land at the South Pole and has to fight dinosaurs and stuff on their way out. This is great fun, classic work. Pick yourself up a handsome printed volume from the Critical Press Media store or from the Critical Press Lulu store, and support independent publishing, or again, download a beautifully formatted, handy electronic version for your phone or for your laptop or whatever, for only 99 cents. And again, this is Edgar Rice Burroughs. These are public domain works. So head over to the library and read them for free directly online out of the Critical Press library. Wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. good books. You need to read them, and the continent of Caprona forms the setting for the new stories from the Challenger Foundation Fort Dinosaur, which will be coming up in the next issue of the Data Vault Monthly. So that's really exciting. Can't wait for that. Let's see, and then the next reprint issue from the Data Vault will be Interplanetary Hunter by Arthur Kelvin Barnes, in which legendary big game hunter Catch'em Alive Carlyle heads on out throughout the solar system, catching all of the various and sundry beasties that live on the different planets and bringing them back. This is great space opera adventure from the era of the pulps. And some of my favorite stories ever. So really looking forward to that. In the meantime, we've got some promos and stuff to play. And let's start off with a little word from my good buddy JT Indy.
Is this your idea of Christian music?
Jesus is mine. Oh, what a force it is of glory divine.
Yeah, me neither. Let's try a little head noise.
Your money, run rat race, you've got two blinds in your face, less for more, you love taste.
So tune in to JT's Indie Christian Music Podcast at www.jtindie.com. Hey everybody, JT here from JTND.com, and I want to remind all of you to head on over to the Podcast Awards at podcastawards.com and vote for me in the PodSafe Music category. Voting runs from the 13th to the 30th, and just to help you guys remember, I will be putting out a new show every day between the 13th and the 30th. So, vote early, vote often. Thanks.
All right, well, there you go. Vote early, vote often. JT's going up against some pretty big guns, including NPR and some of the others. So I'm really excited about that. The other contest we've got going on, you don't need to vote in, but you do need to enter. The November contest from Critical Press Media is create a bard using the Pathfinder. You know what? What the heck? I made this great promo. I might as well play it for you.
Hi, this is Winston from the Critical Mass podcast over at CriticalPressMedia.com. The guys and I are really juiced about the new release of the Pathfinder Core Rules from Paizo Publishing. There's only one problem.
Leo, I assume you're playing a fighter again?
Actually, I'm going as a bard.
Really? That's a bit of a jump for you. You've only played fighters before.
How different can they be?
Bards still suck.
Don't worry. I got it. I'll totally pacify them with bardic music.
To goblin friends, please hear my song.
Here is our mission to you. Using the Pathfinder core rules, make a bardic character that can reasonably substitute for one or more of the four basic dungeon crawl classes. Fighter, thief, cleric, or mage. You have 16, that's 2d8 maxed out, levels with which to build. At least 8 levels must be in the bard core class. Multiple core classes are not allowed. You may use any prestige class or ability substitution from any published fantasy D20 book, provided you could tell us which book you used. Links to the Pathfinder system reference document may be found at criticalpressmedia.com. Entries must consist of a completed character sheet generated using any of the ordinary methods in the core book. Complete characters include pre-calculated attribute bonuses, saving throws, skill bonuses, spell selections, and feats, as well as a description of the character's role in the party. Extra points will be given for explaining how skills, spells, feats, and classes work together. Double bonus points will be given for magic items that uniquely enhance your bard's abilities, and you have a whopping 315,000 gold to spend on gear. Points will be subtracted for a detailed history and backstory. This is a dungeon crawl. Characters don't even need a name.
Save your threats. You have no power here. As if killing the bard impresses them.
The contest runs from November 1st to November 30th, ending promptly at midnight. The winner will be selected by Dungeon Crawl Survival Ratio and will have his character published in an upcoming Critical Press Media publication. Because the only bardic character we've ever been impressed with is Merrick Scythe from Peter Franzen's Spirit Blade, the winner will also receive a CD set of the Spirit Blade audio drama. Submit your entry by email to mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com with the entry contained in the body of the email. Emails with attachments will be deleted unread. All entries will become the property of Critical Press Media. Good luck and hot dice.
Bards suck. That.
That's going to be lots of fun. I'm looking forward to that. And of course, Critical Press is not associated with either Paizo Publishing or the Dead Gentleman Productions, whose movie, The Gamers, Dorkness Rising, supplied the inspiration for this contest. Also, in the spirit of full disclosure, Spirit Blade Productions is certainly a friend of the podcast, but we will be purchasing the product for you, because the more of Peter Franzen's stuff I can give away, the happier I am. Also, big kudos and thanks to the guys over at Fear the Boot, feartheboot.com, and their wonderful RPG podcast. Well, excuse me, the podcast about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more for giving me a plug over there. This is a great show, and I'm afraid our contest is not at all FTB 9000 compliant, but they're good sports, and it's a great community over there, so head over and check it out if you get the opportunity. All right, finally, the Podcasting for Water Drive hasn't been mentioned very much, but it's still going on. And in fact, the big push right now is over in the Two Blind Squirrels podcast over at My Life Ministries, .com or .org or .dot something. Try .org. Brad and Faith have committed to 100 days worth of podcasting to raise 100 plus dollars for Podcasting for Water. So that's really exciting. Head over there and show them a little support. Make a little pledge. Also, December we'll see the release of the Living Waters International Benefit Book from Critical Press Media. Thank you very much to all the authors and contributors who have put in for that. So keep your eye on this page here. Every purchase of this book will include a donation to Living Waters International as part of the Podcasting for Water Drive. And since this is a benefit book, that donation won't end when John Wilkerson's year-long push ends. So I'm really excited about that. Critical Press is starting a new print projects, and of course we're looking for material for the Data Vault Monthly. So head over to the submissions info section of the website. And see if you can't get those creative juices flowing. Fire up the reaction chamber, and get some new material. All right. Well, I'm kind of running long. I didn't mean to spend quite so long on announcements. Let's go ahead and get to the movie commentary.
I suppose you can have what's in the chest. But I get to carry it.
That's it? You're giving in that easily?
You have to admit, that mandolin is quite persuasive.
The Battle for Terra. Do you have an initial impression?
It was dumb.
That is probably as good a summation as any, and far more generous than I would have been. It was indeed dumb. And the sad part about it is I have been really looking forward to this film because all of the previews looked so good. See if I can hit some of the highlights here and check me on these. And that is humans evil, aliens good.
Check.
Black man, good. White man, evil.
Check.
Yeah. War, bad. Peace, good.
Check.
Industry, bad. And, arts and literature, good.
Check.
Yeah.
You forgot groupthink, bad. Individualism, good.
Yeah, I did. I did forget that. You're right. You are very right.
The elders wanted everyone to do one thing. That was the way it was going to be. But the girl was individual, and that's what went out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, don't forget military bad, socialism good.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
The only good part was the cute little robot guy.
The robot was cool. The tech was uniformly cool. The technology ideas and concepts and stuff are uniformly cool without And I spent a great deal of this film, and probably the most enjoyment I got out of this film, was in trying to figure out the physics behind the alien race and the planet that they were on.
You've never watched Dr. Mario. They have a little robot guy that hovers like that. What's his name?
Yeah, but the little slug-like, fish-like alien people who have a neutral buoyancy and float up and down. And you know what?
Because they don't live in a gravity-rich, oxygen-based society. And they don't need legs because they float.
They float. I remember thinking early on, I'm like, oh, well, this is very, very cool. They have a neutral buoyancy. They can go up and down at will. They're in no danger of falling, so their cities can be way up high. Well, at least we're not going to see one of them in danger from falling. And then two-thirds of the way through the film, what happens? One of the lead characters winds up falling, and she's scared of falling.
Okay.
Which was really, really stupid.
She was falling because she came through the atmosphere at too great a speed and got ejected from the vehicle. And although ideally they have neutral buoyancy, I think the point was that she was falling at too great a velocity and could not stop herself.
Yeah, unfortunately, for them to float around like they do, their mass has to be so negligible that, anyway, it was a dumb movie. I feel the worst for having watched it, and I wanted to turn it off.
And the one good guy human died.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, in a noble and supreme act of self-sacrifice. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I want that hour and a half back. I wanted to turn it off halfway through and just, I don't know. I think the children would have revolted because the animals and stuff were cute.
Yes.
But this, I mean, this is what passes for, I won't say quality filmmaking. It's got an all-star cast. I mean, great cast. But this didn't even see an extended theater release, did it?
I don't even know if it saw any theater release.
Well,
I think it was intended to theater release, but I don't think it ever made it. Or if it did, it was...
Serves it right, because this was just a bad, bad film. Not good in any way at all. I mean, and even... This is the kind of film that I would put in and use as inspiration for writing good stories, except for the fact that as cool as the alien world is and as cool as the human tech is, the other features of the animation are so overwhelmingly bad.
Well, personally, if I was those aliens, I would not have ended up cohabitating with the humans. They had already destroyed 3 worlds of their own and their spaceship.
Yeah, well, you know what, part of the...
Don't invite them into your world!
Part of the point is that we all just have to get along.
With terrorists, if you destroyed not one, because since they colonized Mars and Venus, so they destroyed not one, but 3 planets in war, and then destroyed their own spaceship to terraform a planet and destroy a whole other race, and then in the end ended up cohabitating with these people.
These people who supposedly...
They're
going to
destroy their planet.
Probably. But these aliens who supposedly evolved past war and everything, that wasn't lost on us at all.
They didn't evolve past war, they just hit it.
This film is so full of this decrepit moralizing without any firm philosophical or theological basis. It's just sad. Really, they make some half-assed attempt at saying, oh, well, oh yeah, let's not forget theology bad, science good. Because, you know, the whole thing about, oh, the gods, the gods. But, anyway.
Give me a Disney movie any day, with the exception of Poke Your Highness. What? Disney had a couple of really bad years.
Yeah, they did.
When they put out Pocahontas and the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I like almost any Disney film put out.
I have a sinking feeling about this new one, The Princess and the Frog.
I'm gonna like it.
That's fine. I reserve judgment until we've seen it. I just have a sinking feeling.
Well,
and as I recall, I was
I'm
really
sure
looking
have
forward
a
to Pocahontas.
Feeling.
But that's probably because it came at the end of a really good run.
Yes. And it could have been done well, but they chose not to.
Yeah.
I think that The Princess and the Frog will be good, but I think you're going to have to take it in its own right and not as part of what Disney has done before. Because I think they tried to vary away from their set happily.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I think it's getting a whole lot of bad press, which I'm sure is part of your sinking feeling.
Oh, yeah,
feeling.
Voodoo magic. Oh.
Well, no, the...
No, I have a sinking
that's
feeling...
That's not the bad press that I was talking about.
Oh, the sinking feeling that I have regarding The Princess and the Frog comes from the glimpses we've had of the animation, which looks to be ordinary... Just ordinary cell animation like it was done by their Disney Channel animators.
It probably was.
What I'm saying is it does not appear to be theater quality animation. That's part of it. Another large part of it is I'm afraid we're going to see a heroine who is all attitude, and attitude rather than moral virtue is what carries her through the story. And we're going to see a romantic foil in the Frog Prince who is all... how do I put this? Who is superficial and vacuous.
We'll wait and see.
So, yeah, we'll see. But
passing, expecting to not like it is not a good way to start, because you're going to go in going, I'm not going to like this film, and then you're not going to appreciate it for what it is.
That's possible, but I don't know. I've been pleasantly surprised by a number of films, too. So.
Well, like I said, there were several years there that they just really...
Yeah.
Because they did Pocahontas, they did Hunchback of Notre Dame, they did Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were just really, really off base.
I had such high hopes for Tarzan.
But the newer...
I love Tarzan.
The newer crop has been... I don't remember what came after Mulan.
I remember we liked Mulan.
I love Mulan. Mulan came... And then they've recently done... They did Bolt. We really liked Bolt.
Yeah.
They did Up. I really liked
it's
Up.
Pixar.
Well, it's...
The Pixar films have been uniformly good.
They did the Guinea Pig movie. I really liked the Guinea Pig
movie, but it's not
animated.
I hadn't intended to bring up the Disneyverse at all. But since you bring up G-Force... Let's just say that I was morally and ethically opposed to this film from the very beginning. First of all, because
I know, but your daughter loves guinea pigs.
Because it takes the name of a beloved childhood cartoon and profanes it with guinea pigs. Second, because any film involving Disney and talking animals is probably not going to be anything that somebody over the age of 10 is going to want to watch again.
It's a good thing Destiny is 8.
And, you know, just a whole number of reasons. But we went to that movie, and I freaking loved that film. That was an awesome, funny film, and I would be willing to watch especially when the robots at the end go all Terminator meets Transformer, and it was just very, very cool.
Just can't believe Mole was the bad guy.
Shh, don't spoil it. anyway.
But there have, I mean, I don't know. They go through stages. And maybe right now they're going through a bad stage. I don't know.
Well, we saw another film this week. We saw Star Trek.
That was really good.
What's your initial impressions and observations of Star Trek?
Well, as someone who has watched Star Trek because her father liked it, and her husband liked it, and her friends liked it, and she was kind of on it, but would watch it. I liked some of the movies. I loved the Generations movie where Picard and Kirk met.
Mm-hmm.
I'm James T. Kirk. Don't you read the history books? But as far as the Star Trek Megaverse, or whatever you want to call it, I could take it or leave it or...
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed the new Star Trek film. I thought it was odd because it took characters that I have familiar background on
mm-hmm.
and made them not who I thought they were. And it took a while for them to explain that it's a parallel universe type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, what is going on? Because that is not what happens in the old movies. But once you got past that, it was really good. And I like that Kirk has always been kind of maverick, but he was old, so you were like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're all that in a bag of chips. But young Kirk isn't so much maverick as he is angst. It's teenage.
The whole movie is teenage angst.
Yes.
And that just bugged the ever-living crap out of me.
Only with Kirk, though.
No, it wasn't just Kirk. Spock had, Spock was a perennial mama's boy. And I can think of no polite way to describe Uhura. J.J. Abrams took beloved characters and injected a whole boatload worth of teenage angst into them.
Yeah, but it leaves me wondering if there's going to be another movie.
Oh, I guarantee there's going to be. They've got a great dynamic cast and a great dynamic new setting, and I guarantee that the money will show up for another movie. Yeah.
Did you not like it?
I liked it for what it was, and it was very much a product of its time. And I say that because in what it is it took beloved elements of the Star Trek mythos, and it spun them up for a modern generation that demands iconoclasm, that demands intricate and dramatic interpersonal interaction between its principals, and that demands a sense of destiny and mythology behind the purpose for behind the genesis of a situation. Just to compare that in the new Star Trek film, all of the characters are emotionally damaged. Every single one of them. Uhura is a oversexed control freak with a persecution complex. And Kirk is an oversexed rebel without a cause, because who has daddy issues.
Well, that's it. He's got father issues due to his father being blown up and...
Yeah, and he's emotionally scarred from his father, and so he doesn't have that role model. You know, he never had the male role model to teach him how to act and be a man. And consequently, he has problems with authority and all this stuff. You know, Spock is the same way. Spock is a neutered mama's boy who can only...
A neutered half-breed mama's boy.
Who can only express his emotion in... fits, you know...
Of rage.
I was going to say temper fits. It's not rage. It's not Spock expressing emotion. It's Spock throwing a tantrum. Is what it is.
Which is really odd, since the Spock you're supposed to know is all controlled and logical.
Well, the whole thing behind the Vulcans is they deny their emotions, and... Everybody knows better. Everybody knows that it's not that Vulcans don't have emotions. It's that Vulcans deny them. So, anyway, it's a whole big thing. Scotty is a unappreciated, a foolhardy risk-taker who, once again, has problems with authority. The only one on the show that I respect is Bones. And he's... My goodness. He's twice the age. You know, he's Bones in the show is in his 30s. At least.
Well, but he's broken. He's coming from a broken marriage with nothing left. And that's why he's not Bones. Because she left him with nothing. And so that's...
You know,
all he's got
is his bones. Okay, you know what? That is so stupid. Is very much a function of this generation that demands drama for everything. They can't accept that Bones is... You know, Bones comes from his profession of a medical doctor or being a sawbones. Okay? He has to have a dramatic... origin for his nickname, but he's also, you know, he's 15 years older than everybody else, at least.
Okay, but
and is the only one who displays any kind of intellectual or emotional maturity in the entire cast.
But you're living in a society where the up-and-coming generation is unappreciative, believes the world owes them something, and is overly litigation happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the movie reflects.
It does in every possible way. I mean, the climactic moment of the film is the Kirk versus Spock confrontation, and it's supposed to be this big bonding moment for them, and it comes off as being this, you know, petulant little, just petulant little children who have to figure out who's going to rule the playground.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just,
and how
it was
share.
Just really, really disheartening. To watch them rebuild this mythology on the basis of characters that they feel have to be mythological in nature and reflective of an American pantheon of values that is every bit as decadent and self-indulgent as any Roman or Greek god ever was. It's very disheartening. On the other hand, and you know what? I blame J.J. Abrams in totality for that, even though he didn't have any hand in writing the script. And that's where that comes from. But on the other hand, Abrams took a film that, you know, a genre that has a reputation for being clean and sparkly and... You know, you expect certain things from the sets, you expect certain things from the CGI and all this stuff, and he just took it to another technical level. The technical achievement on this film is unreal. The sets, the effects, the camera work, the lighting, this is what modern action films ought to be and how they ought to be made. I mean, it's unbelievable. And the
okay, but he has a lot more technology at his disposal than the original Star Trek makers did all those years ago.
Yeah, you know what? It's not a matter of technology. Might be a matter of budget. Mostly, it's a matter of skill because he's the things that he's doing now are innovative in the same way that Hitchcock was innovative in his day. And it's just really, it's a technical marvel, and the film is very, very cool that way. One of the other things I was really, really happy about with the film is the technical complexity of the story. And entirely apart from the characters, the story is a time travel story that ties classic Trek into the new Trek and just wraps it all up in one beautiful little science fiction bundle that involves quantum theory and time travel, and you know, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful, masterful story. I just it's not got a whole lot of literary value. Because the point of the story isn't literary, the device. The point of the story is to use the devices that they use in a way that enhances their characters. And they do that to great effect. But I wish they had done something better with the characters than they wound up doing. Is all. But yes, I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. Do you have any closing thoughts?
No.
Okay, so new Star Trek good, old Star Trek good, Star Trek Voyager bad.
I don't know, I lost it at Deep Space Nine, so...
No, if you remember, we watched the first two seasons of Deep Space Nine religiously.
And then it went off on some tangent and got all weird.
We lost it, and then Star Trek Voyager just went off in a completely wrong direction. But they did good with Enterprise. I loved Enterprise.
Yeah, but it wasn't on long enough.
Yeah, well, what can you do?
Because they'd already damaged the Star Trek name so badly that it couldn't sustain.
I think it was a network thing with Enterprise. I don't think we'll ever know.
My cat is snoring.
Yes. So anyway, we hated the Battle for Terra, but we really liked Star Trek. And I guess that's all we have to say about that. What's next on the movie queue?
I don't know.
Do you have any interest at all in watching this new Friday the 13th with me?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm old, I can't watch horror movies anymore.
For over 300 years, one story has captured the imagination of millions. One mythical journey has never been more real. A solitary life perseveres on the quest for truth. And though he travels alone, we stand at his side, for his story is our story.
This book contains the secrets of the universe. I'm cursed by a dark power that drains the life from me. That's why I must get to the Mystic City, where the Absolute can purge my curse and recreate me. It's the only way I'll survive.
Do you think of yourself as religious?
I don't know. I'm a man after the truth, wherever it leads me.
Religion is complicated and convoluted. You don't know what you're getting yourself into.
You'll run into many paths near this one while traveling. They'll be crooked and wide.
You have to learn to discern the truth. Sharpen your mind and do not be deceived.
A storm made of fire is coming, and this city will be destroyed.
There's a dark power at work here. This place is called the Swamp of Dread Gloom.
Come back to us, Christopher.
If you keep going this way, You'll have swords at your throat, dragons at your back, and in the end, death.
The choice is yours, Christopher. It has always been yours.
Spirit Blade Productions presents a reimagining of the classic tale by John Bunyan, Pilgrim's Progress. The quest begins at spiritblade.net.
All right, well, as the preacher once said, because my sermon this morning had so many points, my sermon this evening will be pointless. I have a quick commentary on a pair of horror movies, including specifically the new versions of Friday the 13th, which was released this year, and Halloween, which was released last year. And although I'm not a rabid fan of either franchise, I do appreciate horror films for what they are. And I found some very marked differences with these films, especially compared to previous versions. First of all, the new versions are very, very similar to each other in that they try to develop the character and the personality of the main antagonist of the film so that you know who Michael Myers really is, so that you know who Jason Voorhees really is. And this is just... you know what? It's part of the trend that we spoke about with Star Trek earlier, and it annoys me, and that's all there is to it. I prefer my movie monsters to be forces of nature rather than human beings who portray a face of evil. And perhaps that's just me. I don't think the human evil aspect of the story, while it's certainly valid, but I think the story is just so much stronger in a plot like these, where there is basically no reason for these guys to be going around rampaging and slashing and killing people. You know, there's no reason for it. So really, let's stop pretending like there is and turn this from just a exploitation slasher flick into something that might conceivably have a little bit of literary merit to it. So, you know, that's just me. The new films are pretty good, and we certainly do see a larger portion of the characters of Myers and Jason. But, and at the end of the movie, they aren't forces of nature, they're not supernatural, they're just people. And in the case, while the new Halloween was fairly good and fairly consistent, in the case of the new Friday the 13th, I guess it stayed more true to the roots of the series, because it at times bordered on the ridiculous. And I'm gonna have to go ahead and say that this new Friday the 13th was really little more than pornography, figuratively and literally both. So I can't really recommend either of these films for any reason whatsoever. I mean, the Friday the 13th film is just pointless. And the Halloween film from Rob Zombie is a study in human brutality. and that's really all it is. And to be fair, that's something that Rob Zombie does very, very well. So, you know, hats off to him for that. But at the end of the day, I have my fill of human brutality just watching the news. And if I'm going to experience that kind of thing as part of a movie, as part of leisure entertainment, then it had better be making some kind of deep and profound statement about the human condition, or about theological theory or something, rather than just portraying violence. And or not just violence, because I don't have any objection to that. I like action movies, I like violent movies, I like watching fights. But this isn't violence. This is simply brutality, and I find no redeeming qualities in it whatsoever. And that is pretty much all I have to say about that.
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.
Cast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.